The year is 2006. I'm Dave.
I'm Zach.
I'm Charlotte.
And this is My Marvelous Year.
My Marvelous Year, the comic book reading club podcast where we go through the best Marvel comics from its origins to today.
This is a real low-T introduction.
I'm your comic book expert. I'm joined...
Are you taking the deer blood that I sent you?
Are you okay?
Charlotte, thank you for asking. I was in a terrible car accident. Blame today's comics...
Because they were so good you couldn't keep your eyes off of them while driving.
Oh my god, you know exactly what happened. I'm driving my Cybertruck, okay, and I have my Apple Vision Pro headset on.
I've got
a pirated cam rip version of Madam Web hovering over my left peripheral. I've got Marvel Snap open, floating over on the right side in the passenger seat, and I've got Marvel Unlimited open on my lap, trying to get some annihilation in.
I don't love being called out like this. As behavior goes.
And the truck, this so-called smart truck, crashes right into a Jersey Mike's. There's fresh cut meat all over the place. I dislocated my shoulder. I hit a whole family. I'm a victim. I'm not doing. I'm not doing that well.
And you're recording today from the precinct.
I'm a little sore, yeah. Very well, legal. You don't get in legal trouble if you own a Cybertruck. Come on.
You drove back there to like taunt the family because they're staying.
Yeah,
they arrested the family. And you're there now to taunt them. That's right.
The truck is so sharp where it hit them. I'm sorry. I'm a little sore. But here, sorry, I didn't finish my... introductions. I've got Dave Busing. He's the cop, the Herald of.
Just call comic. Me a cop.
But he's the cop of Herald comic, and Charlotte Nova today.
Cool,
Charlotte. Thanks. Before we started, you
I
were like,
I didn't go with the easy joke because there's a whole like house of the Kree that is called the Fieros that you could have made a joke with.
Oh, perfect.
Didn't go with that.
That's true.
I don't think he even went with a joke. What's happening right now? Zach insisted on doing the introduction.
It's not funny what happened to me.
he's in no mood for jokes.
Do you need us to call 911 or is that illegal in the US? I can never tell with what happens in your country.
Wait, actually, I want to dig into this. What do you mean it's illegal to call 911?
It's a joke about how bad public services and healthcare are in your country.
Okay. Yeah, it's true. I mean, you sometimes put your own life at risk if you call 911.
Yeah.
To my knowledge, one of the few free things in America is dialing 911. It is free to dial.
Sure, free to dial until you...
If an ambulance shows up, get shot by a cop.
You
could be at risk, depending on your circumstances. But
we're reading Annihilation today.
As you could have guessed from the intro.
I read the whole thing. I read all the little prequel issues, and I read the whole... Well, actually, I'm looking at the website now, and it does seem like I missed maybe post-Annihilation. There's Nova 1 through 3. I didn't read those. But besides that...
We'll read those
later.
I
read everything. I read all the prologue. Oh, God, really? Okay. I'm going to say... Let me start out strong. I was like, oh, well, people must not like this, right? Like...
People must not like this, right?
I'm going to have the crowd on my side. And then
you didn't mention the concussion you suffered as well.
Right, yeah. And then I Googled Annihilation Review, and lo and behold, people are really into this. And I feel a little nuts. It's pretty boring.
Do you share your story up front to try to engender sympathy? Are you trying to say, listen, I'm glad I'm hurt. I'm already wounded. I've had a tough go. Please don't attack me. Is that what we're where we're going.
I'm actually glad to find out that both of you are on the other side of this so that I can be a little meaner about it. And just, you know.
A little meaner.
I don't have to
meaner.
Know.
Oh my goodness.
Well, because if we were all like, kind of like, oh, it's kind of boring. I wouldn't, you know, I'm not going to come in that hot, but it's going to be a bloodbath. No, it's just boring. I don't even have strong critiques. I'm just, yeah.
Those are weak critiques. I will agree. Zach,
they are weak critiques. I'm going to try to flesh it out more.
Annihilation is beloved. Zach.
I know. Like, I read Comic Book Herald's very own Matt Draper wrote this huge review that I was reading, and then every time he gave like a qualitative statement, I was like, "What? Like, Drax is the emotional beating heart of Annihilation, or like the, you know, the rising tension
all right.
of
all right? We know, just I can feel the listeners leaving. I can feel them leaving, and I just want to start us. Charlotte, you hadn't read this before. I want to know what you think.
Yeah, please.
What did you?
I had never read Annihilation. This is going to be a tough time saying
that word. That's fine.
I had never read the A event before, nor had I read any events of the like Marvel Cosmic era up until basically Jonathan Hickman's Infinity in 2012/13. So like all of this is a huge part of the Marvel Universe and pretty beloved parts as far as I'm aware, as Marvel Universe that I'm fully unaware and haven't read and known next to nothing about. So I was like pretty excited to get into this and these comics, like this era of Guardians of the Galaxy and Nova and Annihilation.
Yeah.
I'm not...
say it's boring too. What? What? I just got beaten up by you. And now you're like hesitant about. Okay.
Yeah.
Go on, sorry.
No.
Sorry.
I didn't beat you up. I don't think it's like insanely boring. I don't think it's as good as its reputation. It feels that a lot of it and my enjoyment was similar to another event we read recently, and I don't remember which one. Of like, oh, I know where creators and stories I like picked up some ideas. More than the actual event itself, like it feels important and like a shakeup more than like actually a great event. I think it's a good, okay to good event that feels important and that's like spawns good stories. I think my favorite part of it wasn't the actual event itself, but the Nova Mini that comes with it as a tie-in.
The final Nova
so
Mini.
So did you read the Mini? The setup prequels as well?
Yeah, I read the entire Annihilation event. So I read Annihilation Silver Surfer, Annihilation Nova, Annihilation Super Scroll, and Annihilation Ronin, as well as Annihilation Heralds of Galactus that comes afterwards, I think.
Yeah.
I read the whole thing, and I do think my favorite part of it is the Nova Mini. I think there's like some character stuff that I like, and it feels new, especially for Marvel Cosmic. It feels like it's gonna be a huge thing. I don't actually think I love the event itself, but I wouldn't go as far as saying it's boring. Like I can find things I don't like about it. Boring. Sure. I don't know if that's what I would say, but
all right. Yeah. So let's give some context, and then we can interrogate why the two of you are so savagely destroying one of the greatest Marvel events. I really love Annihilation. I think it's fantastic. It is, I think as a whole, the sort of the direction and the architecture of it is beloved because it kicks off a renewal of Marvel Cosmic. I think for folks like us who've obviously been doing the My Marvel This Year journey, if you like Marvel Cosmic, it's been pretty quiet on that front. You know, really, really after Starlin's Infinity Saga ends, they're kind of not much thinking or direction for what Marvel Cosmic can be, if anything. This makes it a unified whole again, is really the reason people have fallen for it. So the players involved, actually first, so as part of the My Marvel This Year journey, like in the spreadsheet, if you're following along, which you can get access to the whole thing for as little as $1 a month over on patreon.com/MyMarvelThisYear, or of course you can just follow along in the show notes. We include all the issues we're going to read. For Annihilation, we said we're going to do the prologue and we're going to do the main issue events. It is a recommendation for me to follow the Annihilation reading order on Comic Book Herald. It's not too many issues, and I do think the prequel stuff, if you're enjoying it or think you might, it's definitely going to add some detail. You know, it's definitely going to add some background. like Super Skrull shows up, if you just read the event issues and it's going to be like totally devoid of context, you'll be fine, you know, just like continuity wise. But if you want to dig into sort of the cosmic landscape a little bit more, it's going to help.
I kind of think you need that prologue in Annihilation Nova.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I mean, well, you need the prologue. Yeah, the prologue's included for sure.
Ronin, Super Skrull, and Silver Surfer are totally optional, I think. Although Ronin has some good art. I liked the art in that made it worth it. But yeah, those two are like, I feel like.
And Nova's, you know, Nova is the main character, you know, for all intents and purposes. Yeah. The prologue opens with.
He's so cool.
The World Mind. With Xandar, home of the Nova Corps, being destroyed by the Annihilation Wave. That's like the big.
And we all cried when that happened.
Well, right? That's kind of the point, though. Like, that is kind of the point that, like, there's not an affinity for Novas. I think the characterization of Nova from Keith Giffen in these issues is like, this guy's supposed to be powerful. He's been hanging around Marvel. He's kind of a nobody. Like, this is Richard Rider's journey from former New Warrior and also ran to like actual important hero of Marvel Cosmic, you know, basically.
Oof.
And that's like where this gets cemented. And I think when you have Phantom talking about liking Richard Rider Nova, I mean, it starts right here, unless you're like a huge Gen X New Warriors head.
Well, in France, there are a lot of fans of the original, like, 70s run, because it was one of the rare Marvel comics that was published in France in the late 70s and 80s. And it's like, there was a Marvel magazine called Nova with Nova, where, like, there wasn't a Captain America magazine or an Iron Man magazine, but that we had Nova. It's like, it's one
That's
of the main, like, three titles of comics that were of Marvel comics that were published in France in that era. So, like, to me, Nova is a bigger thing than it probably is for you, because, like, in French context of reading Marvel comics, Nova is a bigger character because he has a big history for comics in France.
Is Nova in France? Is it spelled like N O U V E O U A?
N O U V E O U A.
It's like Nouveau.
No, it's just spelled Nova.
Oh, okay. Okay. I just wondered.
Good joke.
Thank you.
Perfect.
Okay. So that's what's happening here with Annihilation. There's a really good oral history of this that David Harper put together over on Sketched. I highly recommend checking out. It kind of catalogs, like, the biggest thing that it shows, I think, and it's something that you see time and time again with Marvel, but it's like there's low expectations. There's not a lot of attention. This event, like, by the time it comes out, like, Civil War is in you know, that's the focus of Marvel at the time. And we're going to get there later this year. And Annihilation is, it kind of gets to be its own thing. And it's mostly architected by this editor, Andy Schmidt. You have Keith Giffen come in. You have Dan Abnett, Andy Lanning. These players are going to be important for Marvel Cosmic. And, like, they kind of get to do their thing. And I think one of the lessons here, regardless of how you feel about it, is anytime in Marvel there's, like, kind of low expectations and very limited meddling and creators kind of just get to do their thing, there's a chance that those become the things that fans like the most. And that often happens. I mean, that's kind of the origins of Marvel with Stan and Jack and Fantastic Four. Definitely Uncanny X-Men return, right? You see it time and time again throughout Marvel, okay? And then there's more modern instances as well. House of X, Powers of Ten,
you know,
Immortal Hulk,
can I jump in about that?
Yeah.
You know what's kind of interesting? Is you would think it would be the opposite, and it should be the opposite, which is that the biggest swings get to be taken by the people with the biggest, like, cachet with Marvel. Right? Not the people who don't have that much cachet, and they're like, yeah, I guess you can mess around with those characters because no one cares about them anyway. Like, which does seem to be the case a lot of the time. Not exclusively, but, like, yeah, a lot of the comics that we consider the best come from that kind of, like, yeah, Jim Starlin, you can do whatever you want over in your little corner, right? Like,
and you realize, reading the oral history, that it's like the only character in this that, like, anyone cared about at this point was Silver Surfer.
Yeah,
J. Michael Straczynski had plans to do a Silver Surfer series. So there was, like, potential overlap and concern on that front. But otherwise, like, nobody, like, even, like, Thanos, like, nobody really cared at this point, which is kind of wild. So that allows for what I and many fans consider, like, this really kind of glorious resurrection. Now, the chief writer and creative sort of influence on all this is Keith Giffen, who we have not talked about at Marvel, and who passed very recently, so RIP.
We did. We Charlotte and I talked about him for that Drax prologue.
Oh, right, right. Did Drax as the setup and kind of the lead into this and the modernization of Cosmic. Right, which is why that's there, right, is it sets the stage for like getting into Annihilation. Giffen also is famous for work on Legion of Superheroes a couple times, as well as JLI, Justice League with J.M. DeMatteis and Kevin Maguire. And then DC's 52, which is going to come out right around this time, has a pretty underrated, somehow, legacy as both a writer and an artist, because he's the artist with Paul Levitz on Legion of Superheroes, The Great Darkness Saga, which is definitely one of my favorite Legion stories. Then he does Legion 5 years later. Giffen is famous for his style is he does breakdowns of everything, even when he's writing. So, like, he's breaking down, like, the page layout and what it looks like, and he's an artist, so, like, he actually knows what he's doing. It's not just a writer, like, you know, being a dick, trying to tell the artist how to do things. So Giffen's the one writing this. Has one of the, like, listen, there's Jim Starlin and there's Jack Kirby, but, like, Giffen's, he's a tier away just by virtue of, like, timing. Just by virtue of coming later, as far as like influence on big two superhero cosmic stuff, hugely, hugely influential. I don't know how much Giffen had either of you read prior to this.
I think.
I love Justice League International, and I've read all of 52, and I like it. So like everything else I've read, big fan. So, especially that Justice League International, like. I really like that run.
Yeah, if you ever have an interest in getting into Legion of Superheroes, it's pretty undoable without a lot of
that's been my experience.
Stuff. No. Okay, so that sets the stage for Annihilation.
Dave, I want to know what do you love about this? Okay, let's not talk about its reputation and its fans. Let's talk about you, Dave. What do you love about this?
Yeah, so here's why Annihilation is really good.
Legacy.
Okay. It is very effective, and I think two things jump out to me. One, the stakes of it. It feels, the Annihilation wave feels impossible, it feels unstoppable, and it feels like it's coming for Earth next. It's not an Earth story. We don't spend time on Earth. That's not the point. That's good, actually. Nonetheless, you can feel this thing is coming. For all of the Kree and the Shi'ar and the Skrulls and you know, these races that pop up from time to time in the Marvel comics we like, they're out there and we're not necessarily as worried about them, but you can feel like it is just overwhelming all of them. And then the reveal of who's behind the Annihilation wave, which it's funny, they talk about in the oral history, like it should have been obvious. It's called the Annihilation wave.
Guessed it like, last month accidentally.
Yeah.
I was like, it's about Annihilus, right? It's called Annihilation.
Because you see a Marvel cosmic event, and you see destruction, and your first thought is, oh, it's a Thanos thing, or it's a Galactus thing, or, you know, maybe it's a Kree army or whatever. Like, nobody's first thought is Annihilus, and that's for good reason. Annihilus was never a Marvel cosmic villain. Annihilus is the weirdo bug trapped in the negative zone that the Fantastic Four run into from time to time, right? I mean, I don't think we've touched an Annihilus story since the origins in the 60s, right?
Yeah, the weird Annihilus from the Ultimate Universe.
I don't even remember that. I don't. Yeah.
Yeah, I vaguely. But,
I
yeah.
think he's maybe Reed from the future or something. I think there was something like that.
Oh yes, no, that's totally exactly. it. Yeah,
that sounds like something the Ultimate Universe would do.
I think it's actually once Reed, you know, it's like post Maker Reed, and he goes and hangs out in the Negative Zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Okay, so this is a nice 616 inversion, and giving Annihilus purpose, pulling on someone who has legacy and power a little bit, and also who just, you know, you create a new threat, essentially, right? You give something a little bit new that allows all the semi-familiar faces, for those who follow Marvel Cosmic in the past, something to rally against. And Annihilus is a great villain because it's not Thanos, he's not like, going to defeat himself. He's not like overthinking everything and then he's ultimately going to like be the thing that is his own undoing. Like Annihilus is just it's a force of nature kind of thing, right? It's just like
in almost a stupid force of nature, I'm going to say, in a way that
he doesn't have Thanos's cleverness, certainly. I mean, it's not
like when he's arguing with Thanos, he seems like an impetuous child sometimes against Thanos, and I'm like, this really kind of undercuts, like,
yeah,
the plausibility of you having actually done all this when he's just like, no, give it to me now. I want Galactus's power now.
And Thanos, he's kind of like, he's kind of like the Joffrey. He's kind of like the all-powerful God King, who acts like a child. I think early it would have benefited a little bit from showing Annihilus's power, because I think one thing they actually don't really tap into until later in the series is like, oh yeah, and he can kick anyone's ass. Like, it's kind of unclear that there's a, like, you see the impact of his waves, right? It's like his armies are destroying everything. You get that, but you don't necessarily also get, like, and they're following him for this fantastic reason. I agree. He's impetuous.
Even that is, I feel like we see his armies too often up close as, like, individual bug soldiers, which I feel like kind of undercut it. I think there are, like, later versions of this where we see an annihilation wave and it's just, like, a gigantic wave, like, swarm of bugs in space that, like, devastates everything in the path without stopping. And I think, like, I don't get that feel in the actual annihilation event, because we see it. And I think I like it that we see, I like that we see it from, like, planet surface, like Nova seeing the devastation of Xandar. But seeing superheroes fight one-on-one with, like, big bugs kind of undercuts the power and the threat of Annihilation's army, to the point that, like, and like you said with the Thanos stuff, for the most of the events, once Thanos is here, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, it's all Thanos. Like, Annihilus is a fake bad guy. He's not threatening enough to merit this. Yeah. But in the end, he actually is the bad guy. Yeah, I don't know. The threat never feels... I see that the characters feel it, and that feels real, especially when we're in Nova's perspective. But for the most part, like, I never think Annihilus is an actual threat. I don't think it ever sells me on that.
Well, let me question that, because why not? Like, he...
Well, I have answers to this.
The waves immediately destroy Xandar. They destroy, like,
all the Skrull homeworlds. The wave immediately destroys hundreds of millions of worlds, it says.
Yeah, yeah, right? But I'm saying some of that is actually specified with, like, the Skrull, with the Kiln, which we get to a little bit.
It destroys thousands of Skrull worlds.
Uh-huh.
So when it ends with... it's simultaneously... It's, like, too big, but then also the solutions are too small to it. It has that, like, issue of, you know, like... threatening, like, Warren Ellis is extremist. When we just read that with Iron Man, there's that one scene of the guy getting in an argument with this, like, punk girl, and then, like, you see the aftermath of the violence of that, and it's just he just, like, kills her, and it's really shocking and brutal.
Yeah,
and
it,
like,
I haven't sat on I haven't sat on a bench with a punk girl since. Traumatizing.
you don't know what you're gonna do. That is more immediate and affecting than it being like Xandar's gone, like an unimaginably big genocide, and then it's like multiply that by hundreds of millions.
So, like, it's too big to feel anything, is what you're saying.
It's so big, and it comes out of literally, it comes out of nowhere. It's like, you know, a spaceship bug army
just has boom, come from it's the here, edge of
our universe,
and it's destroying everything. Yeah,
and so, like, the idea that they're like, man, we're really holding out on our one world. Like, we got a tough army that's in disarray. We're going to hold off against the wave that has already destroyed hundreds of millions of worlds in the last 90 days. Like, it's just, I don't know. Like, it seems so slapdash, like, in its details.
But here's how I interpret that. I think, first off, I think that establishes the stakes I'm talking about, is the fact that it's just like, it is just a force of nature. It is destroying everything, and they do not have a chance. You and I have
talked about this.
And, like, then the second thing is, they don't start pushing back until they start banding together a little bit. And that's actually something that is super important about Annihilation, whether or not it's believable. Okay? That's going to be up to each reader. But, well, hang on, though, because the important thing is it unifies Marvel Cosmic, is what it does. It gives a sense of a connected galactic cosmic landscape that, like, pretty much has never existed.
I think it connects it successfully, and I think it, like I said at the beginning, I think it gives a sandbox for future stories to play into by tying those different aspects of Marvel Cosmic together, and Marvel, like, Galactic specifically, like, actual alien races and societies. But I think, especially having read Planet Hulk last week, I think most of those comparison species and societies feel empty and like it doesn't feel like there's some the Shi'ar. There's no Shi'ar here, but like the Kree and the Skrull and the Xandarians and Xandai, like most species and planets and stuff, feel the same except aesthetically, right? I never actually care. Like, I see the destruction, but it's not on planets I care about or from the point of view of characters that I care about. Like, it really
and it
takes
doesn't make
point.
You feel it, like, care about
yeah,
those
like,
characters.
I see
your,
that it
both
destroys,
of your
but
xenophobia is showing
well,
so strong
no,
right
like,
now.
Here's the thing. It's with the,
how much we care about the sanctity of life.
The main time I feel it is with the Nova. Oh, is it in... I don't remember if it's in the Nova Mini or even Annihilation...
The prologue establishes some emotional... Very quick.
Yeah.
Just like
the prologue is Xandar.
Yeah.
Right. Because like it's from the point of view of Nova, and like we get.
He's gonna
to
get
meet...
laid. He might get laid.
Yeah. That's stupid. That's dumb. But like he gets to meet, and we get to meet through him, and know about a few characters in the Nova Corps that feel like they could be characters in the whole event, and it all gets squashed away and killed and destroyed so fast.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way that, like, the destruction feels real and feels like, oh, there was a whole thing and all of those characters that felt like they could be something are just gone and Nova's literally the only one left. Like, that's successful in him, like, trying to get out of the rubble and the snow and it being also a character that was, until then, like, a teen hero on Earth and now he's in, like, cosmic war and devastation and genocide. I think that's really effective. Most other times it happens, I don't think it's nearly as successful of making us care about the planets or races that are destroyed. It feels like numbers rather than like texture and story.
I think
Totally.
Well, I think maybe you're overlooking the instances where Giffen is trying to give some emotion. I mean, again, too, like we do have to consider this is an event. It is big. Marvel Comics events are big and not as textured. Planet Hulk is the exact opposite, right? That is almost all texture.
That's true.
Right? So, but over the course of what, 15, 16 issues as well, where Greg Pak is just like, I'm going to develop Sicarian culture. You know what I mean? Obviously, that's not happening here at all.
Yeah.
Giffen definitely has to, and the rest of the collaborators, like they have to rely. First off, these comics look awesome too. The Gabriel D'Auto covers all look like movie posters.
The covers are incredible. Every cover. I don't think every comic looks incredible. I don't agree with that. But I do agree. Every single cover is great. It makes the event look really cool when you first start.
We talked about the cover work with Ladrone and Planet Hulk and just how the consistency and excellence. Like oh my gosh, it makes a difference. Like it really helps sell a thing as like, this is important and cool as hell. It's something I probably underrated throughout my life because my experience of going to the comic shop is like, well, the cover doesn't really matter. The cover's kind of a fake out.
when Dave goes to the comic shop, he says, sell me my comics without showing me the covers. I don't want to bias my...
Well, if you rip off the cover, you can return it. So I have him do that. Hang on. I want to go back to the one.
Dave has more. Charlotte and I are...
To the point of emotion.
Raring to go.
To the point of emotion.
Yeah.
Okay? There's a little bit here and there. We get to know Nova. His journey, I think, has an emotional center. Drax and Cammy.
Yeah.
Giffen, that's Giffen's like emotional heart for him.
He tries,
Does it though?
Don't care about Cammy.
Towards the end of the event, I certainly don't.
That's
care
fine.
About
that,
Cammy,
that's fine that you don't care, but that's definitely where he's trying.
But even towards the end, like they're still making a lot of noise about like, okay, here's my other big issue with this is the emotion doesn't work because he's so glib. Well, not just him, most everyone here. There's so much snark about everything. There's so much snarkiness about the annihilation wave and the destruction it's wrought. And everybody sounds the same. It's got, you know, we were talking about this with Runaways. Everybody's the same, like, sarcastic, snarky guy. But then Giffen keeps doing a thing where he, like, undercuts it.
Name three snarkers.
Nova, Drax, and Quasar, right? Like,
and
Drax
Peter Quill.
A little less than...
Star-Lord.
Yeah, Peter Quill,
Because Star-Lord and Nova like, have... I would say a very good back and forth.
Ronan is really like one-liney.
Ronan is? No, he's right? not.
Ronan's got.
Ronan has a unique voice compared to those characters.
Ronan does all kinds of like clapback one-liners. It's really strange.
Well, anyway, everything Giffen he says keeps, is just like. I
let me finish. Giffen even keeps undercutting it by having characters be like Cammy. Oh well, especially Cammy. Cammy going to Nova and being like, "Do people tell you you're funny? You're not funny. People shouldn't tell you that." He does that like multiple times, like point out that his characters aren't funny. And then I'm like, yeah, I agree. Like you are like undercutting the any kind of tension that is being built here by it, like the constant joking around. But it's not even joke. There's one joke. There's one actual joke here that I think is really funny. But most of the time it's just that Richard Rider is extremely annoying. I have no affection for this character because he's just kind of an annoying, sarcastic jerk. You're, right? He's got like
I just have to tell you, Spider-Man you're not gonna vibes. Win. Like, you're not gonna win. A Giffen isn't especially funny.
I like him in Justice League International, but he has characters there who are not comedy characters, and then he has characters who are comedy characters, and they react to one another appropriately, right? Like you have. Oh my god, Guy Gardner, right, is the loudmouth jerk. Richard Rider is not that far off of Guy Gardner here, but no one reacts to him like people react to Guy Gardner, right? Like, Richard Rider is constantly telling his little machine to, like, shut up. He's so rude to his little machine.
I like Nova and this version of Star-Lord, which maybe we'll talk about a little bit. I like their back and forths a lot.
They're
I actually
the
think
man.
The, like, I think grounding... amidst all of this terror and horror, that they are still trying to keep their sanity through some humor, I do think works pretty effectively. I think Giffen writes, he got Starlin's blessing to write, but then writes a very effective Thanos. Like, he gets Thanos very well, actually, which Thanos I'm very precious like of. I'm very precious kick. Of anyone else coming in non-Starlin trying to do Thanos. It usually ends very badly. Giffen does a nice job. And I, you know, it starts out too, like, plot wise, you know, Annihilus is our threat. Okay, what's Thanos's role in this? And he's kind of just like a lackey for a few issues. And there's this weird undercurrent of like, what are we doing here with Thanos? And then in issue 4, you get the full reveal of like, no, he's playing his own game. He captured Galactus and Silver Surfer. Like, that's the other thing too. Like, the big Marvel Comics event universe beats in this are awesome. are so excellent.
I will agree that him capturing moments. Galactus is really cool.
Thanos captures Galactus and Silver Surfer. Yeah. They make a Galactus gun by tying him up. You're telling me that's not cool. A threat? Come on, that's super cool. In issue 4, when Thanos is
slow down. the Galactus gun is very cool visually and kind of an idea. And then I think he has an entire page of Thanos explaining to Annihilus like how it works, and it's like him trying to do a Jim Starlin where he's like, cosmic power is like a life force.
Who cares?
But it is
cares? That doesn't.
But
even
he does.
Make sense.
It's an entire page of the. I'm saying it's indicative of like the actual writing to set up these ideas. I think it's really.
Oh, I'm sorry you didn't understand how to make your own Galactus gun.
Your eyes just glaze over looking at, you know, like all the proper nouns, especially compared to someone like Starlin, who could do those big ideas where you're like, interesting. Tell me more.
Here's the thing, though, is like, I don't want Jim Starlin writing this event. I'm so pro Starlin writing Thanos. I'm glad it's not Starlin doing Annihilation. You know, I have had my fill of the Infinity Saga, you know? Like, we had gone up and down
every direction.
Just
saying, like,
it's a good thing to
have
someone
else. It's what he's trying
to
do. I mean, I'm just judging it on, like, the merits of what it's trying to do. And I think it's
succeeding,
failing at that. Oh. Yeah. Wait, okay. I mean, even Annihilus has this, like, number one soldier. He kind of looks like Thanos or Drax. I can't remember his name.
Okay. This is actually my one critique that I will allow, is Ravenous looks way too much like Drax.
Oh, well, yeah.
I hate that.
But even that guy, he's got a bunch of Starky lines. Like, he shows up to Usher, and he's, like, ushering in the...
What are you, like, a Zack Snyder head? You want this annihilation?
And he goes, happening? Annihilation, his is the will and the way, and so forth, so on and so forth. And I'm like, is this supposed to be threatening? Like, our guy who's about joke. To do planetary... Yeah, but, like... Oh, my God. I understand it's a joke, but, like, you can't have everything be a joke if you want me to be, like, actually invested in this threat. Like, Fire Lord goes to fight the... I mean, you know, part of it is... Totally. It's humor that doesn't work for me. If this doesn't distract you, you might... Obviously, people enjoy this just fine. But that humor is just nonstop. Fire Lord is fighting the queen bug, and she's like, your death is upon you. And he goes, ladies first. And then blast her. It's so stupid.
That's not even a joke. That's just like a cool one-liner.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's supposed to be funny.
No, it's cool.
I don't think Charlotte. So. I don't think it's even a joke. First off, how hot are those queens? Right?
I mean, pretty. Yeah.
Let's talk about that first.
We're all thinking it.
Listen, okay, am I going to get in trouble for saying it? Listen, I'll take that. I will take that.
Can I say the joke that made me laugh? Because there's one joke that I thought was really good.
I guess.
What's your problem? I'm trying to.
I just think, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I mean, we're here to talk about the comic. Like, if I think it's unfunny to the point of dragging down the experience, that's, I think, a part of reading this comic. You can't just hand wave away being like, well, the actual writing of the characters and their, you know, the authorial voice behind
it is
irrelevant.
I just disagree. It's not, you're right. Okay. If that's what you want to focus on, you're right. I just disagree. That's all. Go ahead.
Richard Rider is like exasperated with his little computer that he has loaded in his head that's like coming through his helmet, and he gives Drax his helmet.
Oh yeah.
Drax goes off and I think this is a Giffen in this one. I don't think it's somebody else at this point. But has Drax like speaking to the Nova hive mind, world mind thing. But we don't hear the other side, so you just see Drax being like, because he handed it to me. I'm wearing it now. Oh, I'll tell him that. Like just the one-sided conversation with someone who's really like dumb and obtuse about everything. That was a great gag.
It feels like it is really a joke that is on I do think that a lot of the jokes are on that snarky tone. And I think that's one of the jokes that is like just kind of funny in an absurd or like dumb way.
It's a joke.
Yeah. I would agree that there's a lot of the humor that feels like it didn't bother me that much, but just because I learned to tune it out, because if I did focus on it, I'd be like, I'd be getting exhausted by it.
I think it's mostly just at the sarcastic dialogue level too, right? I mean, this isn't a comedy book.
Yeah.
It leaks into the characters. The actual action or events or beats or anything. It's really just kind of how they talk to each other.
Yeah.
But if that's like the entirety of the character.
Well, I think saying it's the entirety is a way of an overstatement. It's not. It's moments.
I think it's the majority of like.
Like if you want to say that's the entirety of Peter Quill's character, sure. But yeah, I don't think that's true.
But I guess it's just, it's also, I mean, you know, we have Bendis, right? Like with his writing, or Mark Miller even, right? With like Ultimate.
Is this even in that camp for you? Like this feels Bendis-y?
No. I'm just saying that like you can have writers that have like comedy beats, you know, that you're like roll your eyes at, but it doesn't like. It's not so pervasive that it can like override the entire experience for you.
You lost me at Miller big time.
Well, I'm like Ultimates, right? Like we read Ultimates. There's a couple jokes in there where we're like, ugh, gross, dumb.
Yeah. They're right? pretty but distracting, like, the overall, I would say.
They're distracting, but it doesn't like, it's not the entirety of that book. And it feels like these individual moments, at least those early Ultimate comics. Dave, can I... I shouldn't tell you this. It's just going to make you even madder. You know what? I took breaks to,
you just
to
wanna,
read.
You're just itching for a fight today. You've been watching all this wrestling, and you're just like, I need to get in the ring and throw down. Go ahead.
I took breaks when I was like, I need to stop doing this. This is making my head hurt to read Mark Miller's Nemesis. I like split up my reading because I was like, I need a break. I need to read something palatable.
Was it better?
Hang on. Did you like Nemesis?
Like, I don't know. It's I mean, it certainly is an experience. You can read all four issues of that in, you know, 12 minutes or whatever. So it, like, I don't know. I wouldn't say like.
Did you hate it?
Experienced it. No, I didn't hate it. You know, he it can be.
What did you like more, Nemesis or Annihilation?
Don't make me answer.
Answer
that.
The question, Zach.
If I had to read one again, I would say Annihilation. But. Did I have more fun?
Huge exile. Huge exile.
To your point about that this gathers the cosmic universe together, I do not argue that that is cool as kind of a meta idea, but that kind of feels like when I watch an MCU show and go, well, that kind of sucked, but you know what? Like, I'm excited to see that character moving forward. I didn't like that show, but the addition of this character being added to the MCU is interesting to me.
I mean, so that's like, a version of success here, too, because it is a
that is subtracting Nova, who I do not care about. But like,
well, it is setting the stage, though, just for like, we can do things with those characters. They can have their own titles that can go for 50 issues, which was not the case previous, you know, like Nova, I never had an ongoing, you know, Silver Surfer was the most popular character and he could barely sustain an ongoing. So like it does actually really elevate the ceiling, I think, for what you can do at Marvel.
It extends Marvel Cosmic outside of Thanos, Warlock, Silver Surfer, and the Infinity Watch. Like, it takes all those secondary players of Quasar, of Star-Lord, of, I don't even know, Ronan, and, like, makes them closer to the center and makes it feel bigger. And I actually really, really like that. And it creates relationships between them in ways that are interesting. I think, like, just the fact that this isn't as boring as, like, Maximum Security is a success, right?
Cause,
like,
it's not boring. No. It's not a boring comic. I don't understand this accusation. So much happens. There's so many big, wild things.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you that it's not boring. I don't think it's great. I think it's good. I'm just saying that, like,
stop yelling at Charlotte,
okay? I'm just saying that, like, even though this...
Sorry, things are boiling over. Things are boiling over. I got a little too fanny and passionate. I apologize.
Let me finish. What was I saying? Yeah, even though there's stuff I dislike about it and I can criticize, I'm like, I am judging it on a... In the same way that, like, Planet Hulk, I am judging it on a higher level than the rest of Marvel Cosmic. Yeah. And I think it doesn't succeed at that anywhere close to as much as I like Planet Hulk. But I do think, like, it is impressive that it's... Like, it just stands up and, like, doesn't fall apart, right? Because I think that's been the case of a lot of Marvel events that are reliant on... I mean, it's pretty reliant on continuity, or at least, like, referencing pretty not that well-known parts of the Marvel Universe. The fact that it manages to tell a story that works and is cohesive and is, like, pretty good, that's a huge success. And I will say also that I think a lot of my disappointments criticisms about it are unfair, because I think the main other Marvel story I kept comparing it to in my head while reading it is Jonathan Hickman's Infinity, which comes 6 years after this.
Yeah.
And is like a similarly big Marvel Cosmic event where... Without spoiling any specifics, there is a huge wave of devastation going through Marvel Cosmic and forcing those different alien races and societies to band together. I think Infinity is insanely more successful at showing the destruction and making us feel like, oh, it's about to be over for everyone, and like this destruction is real, and I feel that, and I feel the relationships between those societies, and they feel more textured. But it's unfair because Infinity comes after. Like, there isn't an Infinity if there isn't an Annihilation.
Well, it's not like this was like the 30s and they hadn't figured out the format yet. This is 2006. Like,
sure,
people knew how to do
it. It was a completely different time, Zach.
But I think,
yeah, right.
But I think Infinity is especially like inspired by... I think Jonathan Hickman writing Infinity is very inspired by Annihilation specifically.
Every cosmic thing that comes after, I think is...
Dave, do you like Infinity? Are you an Infinity fan?
Well, so, you know what I would say there, I think Annihilation is much better than Infinity. Obviously, I'm, you know, a Hickman propaganda machine, but like, I think one of the benefits that Hickman has with Infinity is it's in the middle of his Avengers and New Avengers run. A lot of the build to it and a lot of the import of it is something that he's working on in a long game and has built to it. Whereas Annihilate, I mean, I think alluded to it, Charlotte, and I think it's a good point, is one of the things that I think one of the reasons Annihilation is very popular, you can start here. you can walk into this, and this can be your first Marvel Cosmic event. And, like, is there continuity stuff? Like, why does Thanos have, like, a little fairy bird on his shoulder? Right? Why does Drax have, you know, why is he acting the way he is, and he's not a big green oaf anymore, and he's got this little girl he's running around with, right? Like, those sorts of things obviously have happened in the early 2000s. But you can pretty easily just shrug over those and just move on. It's a starting place an era that people enjoy, and I think it's surprisingly effective in that regard. I definitely think it's better than Infinity. I hear what you're saying, though. Interesting.
Then 2012, remember this feeling. We get the anger you're feeling right now, because I'm just going to spend the entirety of the Hickman episode being like, you know, in just comparison to Annihilation, like, it just does this so
you
much.
Definitely, I promise you, you won't be saying Hickman's too funny in Infinity.
That's
that
true.
That is not a complete.
He can do a joke.
That
is very fast.
Occasionally, but yeah.
He has a sense of humor, and it can come out. It does not often. The other big beats in Annihilation that are cool as hell.
That sounds like something Jim Starlin would incorporate into Cosmic Comics. Just a bunch of space beats. You know what I mean?
I bet Starlin has a big red vegetables cosmic flavor. Oh, you're talking veggies. Oh, never mind. Yeah. I was thinking of DJ. DJ Starlin.
The other big beats.
Drax gets to kill Thanos. Oh, Zach, I just remembered why you're so mad.
Yeah.
I just remembered why you're so mad. Moondragon gets her ear ripped off by Thanos.
Okay.
I figured it out.
I'm glad you brought this up. Who's the artist on the actual
Andrea
main series?
Andrea DeVito?
So let me say, I think the main series itself, just as a standalone, does work the best. I'm the opposite of Charlotte. I do think, like, the main thing works fine on its own. Not fine. It's still a little boring. But works the best on its own, just as, like, the six issues of Annihilation, the series. And the artist does, like, these really cool big splash pages of violence that all have more impact than, like, all the genocide we've heard of. So when Annihilus gets, like, his guts ripped out of his mouth.
That's a cool scene, yeah.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, and Drax tearing out Thanos' heart. And then I was going to say, the moment where Thanos just tears off Moondragon's ear to send to Drax, that moment has more... You know, I should have just used that as an example. That has more impact than any of the, like, you know, our whole homeworld was destroyed, right? Like, the immediacy and the violence of that. I mean, it's really hard. It is hard to portray that. Like, I'll admit that. It's hard to say, like, devastation on this global massive scale. We were just arguing about this in Convincible, because I think it fails to
do it
there.
You need both things. You need the human individual connection.
I mean, I think you usually root it down into the human, right? I'm trying to think of, like, examples where, like, Miracle Man, right? The destruction of, like, London and that.
But that's,
I think, does a
but
good
that's
job.
So wrapped in what we know about those two individuals is why.
But,
is
like,
why
it actually sells that, like.
It does.
Oh, well, all these people are dead, right? Yeah, it, like, really sells the horror.
Yeah, that's a good
example.
Like,
that's pretty. It's pretty tough to do. So, like, you know, a little bit of.
Degree of difficulty is higher.
There.
On,
but, you know, he also sets himself up for failure by saying, like, I almost think it would have been better if, like, it was, like, the Annihilation Wave is coming. Oh, no, it wiped out this planet. Oh, it's on its way to some important Skrull world. Oh, no, we couldn't defend it. It's gone. Like the Marvels. The Marvels has a Skrull home thing.
The movie.
Yeah, the movie, like, I think actually does that fine with this planet getting sucked into a black hole or whatever, but it shows, like, here's one little village. I can wrap my head around a little village getting wiped out and, I, like, extrapolate outwards, but it's like, I see 3,000 people running, I can see all these people in danger, and then, like, it roots it in, like, real people. I kind of think, like, the Annihilation Wave coming for, like, a planet at a time instead of it being this, like... Like hundreds of millions of worlds. I just can't get past that. Like, that idea that
it's a big universe, Zach. There's a lot of planets out there.
I know. Yeah, but, you know, there's a reason why that doesn't, like, work for, at least for me, for big stakes.
It immediately puts it in the realm of the theoretical. Like, and I agree that it's generally incomprehensible, right? Like, to a human mind, what does that even mean? Yes, what is the emotional connection? We don't know. It's trying to establish the immensity and ferocity of the Annihilation Wave, but I think they're trying to ground it a little bit with showing the kiln, with showing that there's Skrull stuff involved, right? At least with something we know. I think one of the problems there is early is the big example that is rooted and is grounded is the Novacore. I think Giffen kind of being a DC guy elsewhere, right? You kind of like assume that like, oh, like it's just like the Green Lantern Corps, except like if it's the Green Lantern Corps in DC and they get wiped out by something, I'm immediately like I'm feeling the immensity of that threat because I know the Green Lantern Corps and I know individuals within that corps. I know what they stand for. I know their power. I've seen them in other DC stuff. I don't know jack about the Novacore. Like, I don't. This is where I, right here, that issue is the first time I start thinking about it, you know? So I think they established just very quickly, right, just Richard meets other people there and, you know, he's kind of a rookie and he's new and you don't need to have, like, a history with it. But Giffen doesn't get to lean into, you know, like, a history of that in the way that you would with the Green Lantern Corps. And I think that's actually kind of detrimental, just in terms of being like, I don't know, I guess it's a tough, if you're the scripter, right, and you're actually writing this event, and you're like, all right, what can we show in Marvel Cosmic, aside from, you know, an issue or two later where we show Galactus get beat up and captured? Like, that uses Marvel history to signify threat, right? I don't think the Novacore has that, like, legacy, you know, that continuity to lean into where it can just signify meaningful threat. Saying, And I don't even know what the cosmic thing would be. Frank, like, they capture the Phoenix. You know what I mean? Like, something like that. But I do think that's a harder challenge. Yeah, and that's kind of the point, though, of Annihilation is, like, well, we have to work our way to that. We don't have that yet. We don't have
the unified
cosmos.
I actually think him, like, sapping the life out of Quasar kind of does that a little bit.
Yeah.
He, like, pulls the life force and he skeletalizes that guy.
And I like that, like, every time there's something that could potentially be a threat to Annihilus, he turns that back into a new weapon for him. Like, he absorbs the Quasar's force and, like, takes Negabands. He turns Galactus into a gun for his army and, like, insane power. Like, that is a way in which I think the threat is effective of, like, oh, every time we've thrown something huge at him, he's absorbed it to become twice as strong. That works, and that's kind of cool.
And I guess you do also have, like, Thanos is working for him. And,
right.
Thanos doesn't work for anyone. And obviously...
Although, like we said, like, you are just like, well, he's not really working
for
him.
Yeah, no, it works. But, like, you don't totally know that. And Giffen gets that.
I guess he is pulling his own scheme there, and then Drax just interrupts it with a classic Drax heart yanking.
Well, that's the coolest thing about Drax finally getting to kill Thanos is the moment he does it is the moment Thanos would have ended the threat of annihilation.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. Yeah, like, he was actually going to stop the war, basically, because he was like, all right, Annihilus has gotten too big for his britches. Because Thanos is the mastermind behind the whole capturing Galactus, getting the cosmic energy. Annihilus is trying to use Galactus' cosmic energy. And then what Moondragon parcels out of Annihilus' brain is that he ultimately just wants to destroy everything in the universe and the negative zone and just wants to sit on a pile of nothing and just be alone. Very, very nihilist, which is funny because, like, Thanos has been there, but at this point, I guess, in his journey, he's not, you know? like Thanos, he has these cycles of, like, how much destruction and devastation he actually wants. I love the scene where Moondragon's like, why are you doing this? Why are you working with him? And he was like, I was curious. I kind of wanted to see. I think that's perfect Thanos stuff. But he's going to stop it. And then Drax rips his heart out and finally achieves his purpose at, like, the worst possible time for the universe. It's great. It's awesome.
It's a good moment. I agree. I mean, those big moments of violence, I think, all kind of land towards the end. Including Richard Rider just defeating Annihilus, which I don't actually buy how he does it. Like, it's cool.
Yeah.
It looks cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I was watching wrestling last night, and there's a classic wrestling dynamic, kind of a match will be like the scrappy small underdog against the unbeatable huge guy, right? And the big guy just beats on the little guy through the whole match, and then through, like, perseverance and, you know, like, cleverness, the underdog rises up to somehow, like, pin the big guy.
Yeah, I think of the Bible and David and Goliath, but wrestling, that works.
No, I'm thinking of wrestling. And if when that works, it's the coolest thing ever. And then last night they had a match where some people dominated the other team, and they looked so weak and so flimsy, and then just somehow at the end they did one cool little trick and then they pinned them and you're like, well, that was stupid. What do you mean?
Yeah.
There's no way they could have beat them. It was so contrived. And I was like, just like Annihilation. I literally thought that. I was like, this is just like the comic I read.
Yeah. Okay. So. Maybe. Charlotte, what did you think of Nova defeating Annihilus at the end?
Nah, that worked. That's okay. I like that.
I mean, they do... The throat ripping is very cool and very, you know, like, visceral. So that does a lot to, like, smooth it over a little
bit. I think
bit.
To that point, like, how do you say that? Annihilus? Annihilus?
You can just call him the Big A if you want.
The Big A? No, that's Apocalypse. I can call him...
Yeah, you're right. It's taken.
Yeah. Big Bug Guy, he's been, like... His power has been stripped down and, like, he's been weakened enough to that point. So I'm like, yeah, that works. I'm okay with that. And even just, like, symbolically, him being, like, the Joffrey to Thanos for most of the events.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's... Yeah,
well, see, because we're saying that, like, but Planet Hulk had that. I mean, Planet Hulk had this kind of, like, petulant boy ruler that was rooted in, like, you know, social signifiers that we recognize of, like, oh, this is just, like, a privileged, rich asshole kid who gets to be in charge. You don't get that with the Annihilus. Like, there's no, you know, like, recognizable structure to that, right? That, like, he's just...
We're playing in such Kirby-ified cosmic like comic book BS though, like, and I say that in the most loving way, like, I don't ever expect or desire to, like, understand Annihilus. Like, this is a big bug creature that lives in the negative zone, you know what I mean? Like, it's pure sci-fi fantasy. Like, he's just, like, he's a monster from a monster story.
Yeah, I could do that if I bought the threat of him, I guess, but, you know, it didn't land for me. But no, I agree, that's not necessarily, like, the killer blow to it, but we do get a lot of time with him, right? And I, like, most of the time we spend with him kind of undercuts him, you know.
I do think there would be something to him being less of a presence as an actual just person walking around on screen. Like, if we only see him on a throne, we don't know where. For the most part, like, that feels more threatening. He feels like if he starts being a person and, like, having discussions with Thanos while they're, like, both the same size and, like, basically equal presences to each other, that is a big part of lessening the threat.
Zach, like, he can't
feel more threatening than Thanos in the same room.
Agreed. And he can't be more intelligent either, because then you'd have two people doing the same thing. Zach, imagine if the Undertaker pops, he sits straight up 90 degrees out of his corpse, right?
Yep. Out of his corpse?
Doesn't he pop up out of a corpse? Or out of a coffin?
Excuse me. Yes.
That's a gruesome visual.
Yeah. No, he pops up out of his coffin.
Classic WWF like of the 90s. Undertaker's skeleton bursts out of his own corpse.
Right.
Okay, go on, he pops out of his coffin.
And the lights are dim. They're playing, you know, Metallica or whatever. Into night, right? Something like that. And and then they give him a mic and he's like, "Hello everyone, I'm here to defeat Jericho," right? And he just, that's what Annihilus talking, right? Like, every time Annihilus talks, it's like, I wish you were sitting on a throne, like Charlotte was saying.
Dave,
was
speaking. I can't imagine Annihilus having a threatening
voice. No, sorry.
All I heard was Charlotte, Zach. But... Sorry, I only have ears for Charlotte. For the rest,
you know, what's funny? We're watching Star Trek: The Animated Series right now, and every time they pull up an alien on the viewfinder on the screen, from Klingons to Romulans to, like, bug creatures or crystal aliens, whatever, they all sound exactly like the voice you just did, Dave. It's really funny. Like, they have, like, the Klingon warlord, and he's just like, "Ah, Captain Kirk, I see you," like. They all have that same voice. It's like one guy who does one voice for all the aliens.
Well, it's, you know, listen, it's a living, Zach. I try to,
you know what,
I try
you brought
to
up
make do where I can, and I try to get, you know, some money for my family, and Star Trek called.
I just
want to
point something out where I am watching 90s wrestling, 1996, April 96.
You pointed this out several times. It's not
Undertaker. I know this is too good, though. I know it's not everyone loves the wrestling talk, but it'll be quick. Undertaker is feuding with Kevin Nash right now, and Kevin Nash destroyed Undertaker's home, aka his wooden coffin, with a sledgehammer. And then so a couple weeks later, Kevin Nash is fighting some other guy, and Undertaker's lackey, Paul Bearer, wheels this big steel coffin down the ramp next to the ring.
Yeah.
And Kevin Nash, like, distractedly finishes his own match and then comes out and gets, like, a hammer or something. And he's so, like, nervous opening this coffin to, like, find out who's in it. And he pulls open the coffin and there's plastic wrap over somebody. And it's Kevin Nash under there. They, like, did this really good job of getting someone who looks just like him. But then they had, like, filmed it of him being in the coffin. And he finds his own body in the coffin that was rolled down. Mm-hmm. It's really good. 90s wrestling is a lot of fun. Charlotte, you should be watching with me.
Is 90s wrestling better or worse than Annihilation?
Better. Easy.
That's actually, if that was the March Madness poll, I would actually have a hard time with that one because it is actually very fun. Yeah. Charlotte, what did you think of Star-Lord?
He's just a guy. He's just a guy with a robotic eye.
Yeah,
just a guy.
Which, like, I was like, I thought he came, like, he was coming back for this. I thought there was nothing between the two, between, like, his 70s series and this. I think he actually appears in, like, a Thanos comic before this. Is that right? The Samaritan or something?
That's the Giffen written. So Starlin does 6 issues, and then Giffen finishes the last 6 issues of the 12-issue Thanos. Yep.
So I'm curious where, like, what's he, because I think from what I understand, that's not, like, the same guy as the 70s comic, right? Like, it's not the Star-Lord from the, like, 70s John Byrne, I want to say, comic isn't canon to the Marvel Universe. It's just, like,
it's not canon to Marvel. It is referencing the idea that he used to be like that. So that's, like, the mystery of him right now is, like,
yeah,
he used to have, like, magical Star-Lord powers, and he's kind of just like, no, I'm just a guy with a robotic eye.
Yeah.
Who makes snarky one-liners. Yeah.
He's okay, and, like, he's just a guy. Up until the point where I'm like, oh, is there a... And, I know it's a thing. I know that it's a thing for some readers/writers, because I've read Al Ewing's take on the Guardians of the Galaxy, but, like, Richard Rider and Gamora and Peter Quill, like, there's a thing going on with the three of them.
You're feeling it here.
Yeah, like, I see where Ewing takes that, right?
Gamora and Nova just have sex here. He, like, makes a funny little joke about it, about strange bedfellows, which just made me laugh. But, Gamora in the Ronin series gets a great splash page of her sitting on a throne of skulls. So, point that out, it was cool.
Could have used, it is interesting to see, like, you have Star-Lord, you have Gamora, you have Drax. They're, like, almost unrecognizable especially Star-Lord. Like, it is inconceivable reading this work that Star-Lord would be a household name, right? That Peter Quill would be known by millions.
But he really, like, do they really retool him? Is that what I'm hearing? Like, in the comics, rather?
There's a journey here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There's a journey. Don't worry, Zach. We're going to read all of it.
Okay. I was glad that we just covered Planet Hulk, because it was nice to have, like, a big sprawling sci-fi comic to, like, have as a point of comparison that I really liked, just to, I don't know, counterbalance that it's like, no, I just don't like sci-fi, you know, like Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
Because that felt like generally a pretty good version of this to me. And if you want effusive praising Zach, that's not a phrase, Zach, who's going to praise a comic, next week we're going to do Marvel Zombies, and I'm so psyched. I'm going to gush about Marvel Zombies. I love Marvel Zombies.
I'm actually, Zach, we're actually canceling that episode. You've lost your privileges to read Marvel
and
Zombies.
And you're not that... Wait, you like Marvel Zombies, right? Are you hot on...
We'll see, because now I feel like, you know, if you like something, I'm inclined,
yeah,
I'm
no, inclined I, to greatly I love dislike this. It. Most of the time, like, when I'm, you know, really effusive about something, you're either there with me or you're like, yeah, that's pretty good. I'm glad you liked it. Like, that's it. So we don't.
Well, I don't know.
Usually have the, like,
I don't know that that's happened on this podcast, like, that you've been positive about a Marvel story,
a comic. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this might be my first.
We'll have to see what it's like.
250 episodes into my Marvelous Year, Zach reads his first.
Remind comic that he likes. Remind us what are, because you made a list. What are your top 5 Marvel comics?
Daredevil, Rage of the Panther, Thanos Quest, X-Force Ecstatics.
Okay.
So Daredevil, that's Love and War, and then like the first Miller Daredevil.
Thanos Quest obviously being the cosmic one of the bunch.
Well, and then Jim Starlin in the 70s is my number seven.
Yeah, yeah. So you're a Starlin guy. I do think, you know, Starlin's cosmic landscape, because it is so focused on Warlock and Thanos, it is very centered. It is very focused on individual behavior and and their own sort of quests, you know, literally and figuratively. And
it is also more cosmic in like literally cosmic with like big gods and ideas made flesh and like infinity and eternity. This feels more like pure space opera sci-fi with like big war between big alien races, which I don't think Stalin does that much of. He's usually more like spiritually cosmic.
Because Starlin's Annihilation is Infinity Gauntlet, right? I mean, those are the comps, right? Like Starlin's Infinity Gauntlet is his version.
Or whatever that one with the like the Holy Crusade where Warlock splits in half. And Crusade, Infinity Crusade. No, I mean, I want to make it clear, like, I'm not judging. I didn't even really think of Starlin that much reading this somehow. Like, this isn't a point.
I don't think you have to, which is kind of. I think it's smart, but it's also like, if that's the stuff you love, it can feel like an absence.
Well, that's what I mean. I wasn't like being like, well, Starlin like does this better, and like really the only time I had like the Starlin comparison is that one page where I felt like he was directly trying to tap in to what Starlin does, where he was talking about like the melding of biology and cosmic power, aka, you know, the soul, the life force, whatever. Like, he got into all that stuff. That was the page that I thought that. Besides that, like, you know, I'm not looking for this to be that, you know. I just also like on the what this was setting up. Like Charlotte said, like Hulk sets up all those different races and planetary cultures and stuff and builds them. And I kind of felt like that is necessary here for it to land also. So.
Now, here's a question. We've read in the 2000s now a few Marvel events. Avengers Disassembled, House of M, Annihilation, technically Maximum Security. Where does Annihilation sit amongst the Marvel events? Grading it on that curve. Charlotte,
I'm glad you brought up Maximum Security, because I was thinking, what's the last time I didn't like an event this much? And I couldn't figure it out, but I think it's Maximum Security.
I think it's
above Maximum Security for sure.
Yeah, I think if we're not counting Planet Hulk as an event, which really isn't, it's a storyline. I think House of M is still number one, probably. Then Annihilation, then Avengers Disassembled, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's my...
I would go Annihilation Disassembled number one for me, for sure.
Okay.
I don't think it's especially close, actually.
Huh.
And I'm pretty pro House of M, you know? I think I was pretty positive on
that. Okay, here's what I can see that, though, because I do think, like... Ugh. Getting me to admit. I do think Annihilation is more consistent than both Avengers Disassembled and House of M, and feels like it's more like there's a clearer idea and it goes from like point A to point B to point C to point D, whereas House of M and Avengers Disassembled both like take these big leaps generally. I think Disassembled's a little better, but like House of M especially just takes these huge leaps all over the place.
Like, to me, there's a first half of House M and then there's a second half.
Yeah.
And it's not, and I like the first half, I don't like the second half, you know? Annihilation doesn't have like a drop off to me. Like, I think one of the problems often with Marvel events is the back halves tend to struggle, and they kind of have a hard time resolving in something that is effective. And you know, because they're always trying to, like, well, how do we set the stage for the next era, right? Whereas Annihilation is like, how do we build to the next era, I think, in more of a positive way? I don't know. Maybe it's just that I like what comes out of it, too. It's kind of hard to, like, take that out of your brain, you know? Once you've experienced it, like, because House of M, it's like, well, what comes out of it? It's like Decimation. It's like, well, Decimation kind of sucks. Like, I don't, you know, like, it's generally negative for X-Men comics. But Annihilation, it's like, you know, now there's like a Marvel cosmic landscape that you can do things in, which I still think is like architecturally is its greatest strength. It's like the Kree talk to the Skrulls, talk to the Novas, talk to the whoever else, the Guardians, right? Whoever else is involved, right? You have like an actual like galactic front, I think. We haven't even touched the Shi'ar yet, right? It's like they're going to come in. I just think that's important to like establish, you know, it, I think for Cosmic, you don't want it just to be like the X-Men are in space and they met somebody and here's who those people are. Like, it's useful to have your own sci-fi universe separate from Earth. And I think that's what Annihilation is maybe best at least in terms of what it builds towards. You know, like the Heralds of Galactus are just out here. They're just out and about. Like, that's cool. I like that stuff. You know, Terax is infected by bugs. Okay. That works.
Oh yeah, that was good. I liked them showing up all like bug mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was good.
I just think there's a lot of
it kind of felt
play.
Like it came out of nowhere, but yeah, it was a good visual at least. I'll say all this has a real uphill battle with me. Like, I don't find this stuff naturally that cool, you know? So like
what stuff?
Trying to get Skrulls and Krees and Shi'ars and like all the species that have been set up already, all the different like planetary cultures.
Yeah.
Like we're 50 years into Skrull and Kree, and I'm still like, I don't know.
Because that is the challenge here, right? Is to make
especially
them
the Kree.
Is to make them super interesting. Because I think,
yeah.
I think all of us, I don't know, Charlotte, if you're a, I know you're a big House Fierro fan, but like aside from that, are you like, I don't know that there have been awesome Kree story. I mean, the Shi'ar probably who have the most emotional connection with just because of X-Men. I don't know. Do you have like cosmic favorites out there, Charlotte?
Not really. Yeah, I think the problem I meet is that like these, they don't feel that different from each other. Like the Xandarians don't feel that much different than the Kree. The Skrulls feel a bit different just because they have like that shape-shifting thing going on. But even that, like they literally all look the same, and like there isn't very much a sense of culture there. And then it's mostly, I mean, for now, like, yeah, the Shi'ar aren't here yet, the Spartaks aren't here yet. So for now, it's mostly the Kree, the Skrulls, and the Xandarians. Yeah, don't have favorites. So, like, I think that's the problem so far, is that, like, I have characters I like, but the galaxy itself doesn't feel textured and doesn't feel like it is an actual society that works together. I don't really care about the geopolitics of the galaxy yet. But I think that's gonna come. I don't think I like the Skrulls and the Kree until 2020's Empire, which I know is maybe a bit controversial, but yeah, I don't know. That's what I think.
The Kree is just like I liked the Kree more here than ever before, which is they're not that exciting, but like during the little Ronin miniseries, just seeing like Ronin interfacing with the Kree rather than just being like a guy who shows up and is like, you're in trouble. Him getting in trouble with the Kree and like dealing with Kree politics. I was like, this is probably the most I've ever liked this guy.
I think that's a good direction. I think the directions that the prologues establish are all pretty smart. I like that Ronin stuff you're describing. Obviously, taking Ronin the Accuser and making him a R-O-I-N Ronin. Is like right there and they're kind of doing that. The other one, making Super Skrull, I like the interpretation there. I'm not like in love with those comics, but like the interpretation of we made this MF for the Fantastic Four, yet he loses all the time. And him losing the respect and sort of like trust of the Skrull people is kind of a nice Super Skrull take, I think. And now you got this poor guy trapped with the Thing arm. You know, you mentioned they all look the same. It's like, this guy has to walk around with the Thing arm all the time, you know? And the people are, like, kind of just finally being like, you lose, you always lose. Like, you're a loser.
He's pretty cool, though. No, he's pretty cool.
No, I'm saying I like his character. I'm saying that's, like, the culture.
Well, I said some really mean things about him.
So. Ooh,
Super
Skrull,
incredible. His favorite band is Jethro Tull.
Perfect. Question for you, Dave, about Moondragon and Phil-Avel.
Yeah.
They're a couple, they're in a relationship. Has that been, like, it feels like it's hinting at it here.
Yeah.
Has that been a thing? Has it been, like, a Destiny Mystique thing of, like, oh, we're hinting at it, but it's going to take a while for it to be actually canon that they're lesbians?
That is a good question. I'm thinking that begins in the pages of like the Captain Marvel stuff, probably the Peter David was writing.
Peter David stuff.
If I had to guess, I don't actually know the answer, but if I had to guess, it doesn't get canonized until just a little bit from now. But maybe I don't actually know. It's certainly on the table at this point, right?
I mean, they're literally like the ending of them, of the ending with, okay, where are our characters now and like where are they going, is just the two of them holding hands and walking around, like essentially having a holiday together. Like it feels intentional.
How could it not be? Yeah.
Intentional.
But then you have readers saying that about Mystique and Destiny, where it's like, wait, what? That wasn't...
Sure. I think it feels more like... It feels like Giffen, or like whoever the artist is, has been given more leeway with that than like Clement was with Mystique and Destiny. I feel like, oh, yeah. Well, this is going to be a thing. But yeah, I'm curious. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see if that's something we read.
Zach, have you... Have you recovered from Moondragon losing her ear, or was that what led to the accident? How are you going to handle that?
It was so cool. It was very cool. Then, like, is it, did she get her, like, arm skin ripped off, or is that?
Thanos, like, he burns her arm at one point and reveals, like, the bugs worming their way in, which I think is pretty gross.
Yeah.
But then later she shows up with just, like, a metal, like, robot arm, so I think that was
real. Is she going to have, like, a cool robot ear from now on? Or is someone just going to write her with an ear and be like, just throw a sentence in about, like, ever since my dip in the ear regeneration pods?
Yeah. I mean, that happens with Nova at one point. He's like, I got my leg replaced sitting in the med bay or whatever. It's like, you lost a whole leg? I guess that tucks out here.
Yeah, that's right. That's good. Anyway. Yeah, it was a good moment. I thought he just pulled her... It was funny, in the moment, I thought he just pulled her earring out of her ear, and I was like, ooh, ow, Thanos, you're so mean. And then, like, later Drax opens the box, and the whole ear is there, and I was like, oh my god,
yeah,
that was way worse than I thought.
I do think
went back to, like, confirm.
Right. His whole, you almost forget how cruel Thanos is, I think, throughout this event.
Yeah, he's been kind of on a nice guy kick
since,
like, the mid-90s.
But that's definitely a reminder. It's like, oh, no, he's not the hero. Like, we're not actually meant to be rooting for Thanos all the time. Okay, so I had a great time rereading these. I gotta say, I was very pleasantly surprised. Not surprised. I was very just it's confirmed, like, something I thought I loved. You go back and it's always like, is it as good as I remember? I think both this and Planet Hulk hold up very well for me. I definitely didn't have any sort of like negative turn where I'm like, oh shoot, that doesn't work anymore. And I definitely just have a renewed respect for, I think, just kind of like the timing of it and what Giffen was able to pull off, especially. This was a very needed thing for Marvel Cosmic, and to do it through I love the structure of it too, honestly. Like, I like giving character miniseries lead-ins, one big prologue issue. It actually, they talk about this in the oral history, it pretty much copies DC's Infinite Crisis, if y'all are familiar with that at all. It's like very much a copy of that structure, but I do like that event structure. Certainly a lot better than, oh, and here are all the tie-ins mixed in with the event. I actually don't think ever works quite as well, oftentimes.
Oh, I like Infinite Crisis. I read that. I was like,
I had a good Infinite Crisis experience. I don't think it's like an amazing event, but I like the structure of it as well.
There's some kind of fun stuff there. Yeah.
Giffen does the Thanagarian Ron War in Infinite Crisis too. So he's all over the cosmic event stuff, both DC and Marvel at this time.
It's interesting that
the least of the tie-ins.
Yeah. It's interesting that at Marvel, from what I've seen, Annihilation was kind of the counter event to Civil War. Like, both were going at the same time. And like, Civil War, the huge thing, Annihilation was like, oh, if you don't care for Civil War, like, here's another thing.
I saw Matt Draper's thing said, like, it sold basically, like, a fifth of the copies.
Yeah.
The Civil War. But that's just, like, 60,000 copies or something.
But it kind of feels like now the tendency has inverted. Like, I feel like people are more fans of Annihilation than Civil War nowadays, maybe? I don't know if that actually
holds
true.
Although, it's still, critically, yes, but, like, popularity-wise, like, Civil War is still huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it was a massive book then. It's a, of Marvel struggles with, like, evergreen trades, like, Civil War is still at the top for them, I think.
Yeah.
Where it's just kind of like, which is weird, we'll talk about it, but it's like, that was an early one for me too, and it's like, you can kind of start there, but also you shouldn't,
Yeah.
But people do, that book still gets a lot of attention, kind of right place, right time, for sure. But I would say, if you're comparing the two, it's like, you read Civil War if you're, new and don't know a lot, and you read Annihilation if you're, like, really cool and, like, wear sure. nice clothes and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Wear nice clothes.
Yep. It's very fashion-based.
If you have, if you have good hygiene and like brush your teeth.
If you brush, if you like... floss, you read Annihilation. Yep. If you don't, you read Civil War. All right. Any thoughts? Any final
take this home.
Final remarks?
No. I feel like we've been done for a little bit.
This is definitely your weirdest zag, a zag in a while. It's hilarious to me. I was thinking this last night. Last recording on Planet Hulk, we talked about how like, you know, how like kind of uncomfortable our Mutant Master fight was and how we're over that now and that'll never happen again. And then you chatted last night and you're like, I hate these comics. And I was like, what? We're doing it again? Are you kidding me? Like, we're immediately going to go back to that. Just like clearly itching for a fight. But Charlotte,
I'm not itching for a fight. I certainly don't walk into Annihilate. I had no preconceived notions
for this
comic, right? Like, I didn't know what this was about. I didn't know, you know, anything about this. And honestly, I was shocked when I was like, do people like this?
It's funny to me that you have to ask, like, even that you genuinely don't know the...
I mean, there's some stuff I know the reputation of, right? Like, I know Civil War has kind of a middling, you know, it's popular, but, like, the critical response is not, like, enormously popular, I think, you know. And I know Civil War 2 has, like, a really negative response, right? Like, I have some preconceived notions with some of these. But Annihilation, I had nothing. I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
So, to find out that people really liked it, I was like, what? This is... makes me feel crazy.
Charlotte, do you think your expectations, like, shaded? Like you knew people loved this and you thought it was going to be better? Or is it...
Maybe, yeah. I think that... I do think probably that was part of it. I'm curious to see where I stand on the like Annihilation Conquest and the upcoming cosmic stuff. There is like a change in authorship, right? Because like Keith Giffen isn't going to keep going with this. It's going to be taken over by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. So I'm definitely curious to see where it goes. Probably going to try to temper my expectation going forward. But yeah, I'm still excited.
Okay. Yeah.
See, Charlotte gets away with basically having the same opinion as I do by just
because she coats so it in less it. Of like in less just like abject like. I mean, you described it as a car crash in a Cybertruck. So
Charlotte was I'm saying it polite. Caused a car crash in a Cybertruck.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And if not literally, then metaphorically.
Mm-hmm. No, I got it. I understood.
I don't think Zach and I had the exact same opinion. I think
no.
I would disagree of it being boring. I think like we had similar criticisms, but I don't think I.
Well, I just have like a really complicated brain that requires.
Oh, it's complicated. We agree.
High quality art to keep it like Nemesis to keep
like
it
wrestling.
Oh my god. That's a personal attack. Come on, you have to admit that is a personal attack on me.
I genuinely was like, maybe I shouldn't even bring that up because Dave's just gonna get so mad.
I think I have that ranked as like my. It's in my bottom five comics of all time.
It's tough with him. it's tough to be.
Listen,
like,
I have been very fair. We'll do this when we do Civil War. We'll do the Miller thing when we do Civil War. I'll save it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Coming up next. Doctor Strange, The Oath, Marvel Zombies, Black Panther Gets Married, then The Road to Civil War, then Civil War Proper. If you are wanting to do the Civil War full reading order, you can find it in the spreadsheet, patreon.com/MyMarvelousYear. You can find it at comiccarol.com. You can read the whole thing. Guest star now. Start early, because we're not going to be reading the whole thing as part of the club, okay? But for those who want to, and I know there's a lot of you, now's the time. Right? A lot of tie-ins. I tell you what, there's a lot. Charlotte, if you want to do tie-ins, like, I don't know, quit your job, like, cancel your relationships. Like, there's a lot of...
Cancel your relationships. That's what you... do you know we started 2006 on January 14th is when the first episode came out?
Yeah. It's a long year.
Yeah, it's going to be April.
It's a long year,
I mean,
and
we
it's
got
getting
Invincible
longer.
In there also. Like slowing things down.
So. Yeah, but we're gonna do it. We're gonna make it through 2006 by.
I'm psyched for next week because then we can, especially because we've been doing Invincible, you know, and I'm down on Kirkman there, so it'll be nice to be nice to Kirkman, you know.
That's what I always say.
It's nice to be nice.
All right, I think that's it. Thanks everybody for listening. You can support the show over patreon.com/MyMarvelousYear. Leave a review. Let us know your thoughts on Annihilation. In a review on iTunes. Slackers, those of you in the Slack, which you can get access to through the Patreon. I'll be curious which way everybody goes on this one, for sure.
Me too.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, I think there's a tendency to sort of, like, Zach runs the Slack, and he does such a good job at community moderation that you're kind of like, well, I don't want to get banned. I don't want to get shadow banned, you know, so you, like,
are you kidding
agree
me?
With
like,
him.
My number one, like, moderation is me being like, hey, you have to be nicer. Like, just because Dave's mean to me on the podcast doesn't mean we know each other. You can't just be mean to me.
I know. I try to be.
No, it's fine. You and I, it's fine. You know, you just have to get to know me before you can start roasting me.
It is important. I think people don't understand kayfabe.
Sure. Yeah.
And, like, listen, when I screamed at Charlotte about the comic not being boring, that was not kayfabe. That was authentic.
But
generally, I'm playing it up.
Yeah.
Okay. Just so people know. Okay. Support the show, patreon.com/MyMarvelousYear. Music by the show. Music by the show is by me. Mm-hmm. If it's by My Marvelous Year, it's definitely me singing. But if it's music for the show, it's by Disaster Piece. You can find everything, all the reading orders, and show notes. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next year.
See you next year.